sit at that low level. Even Rabbi Stern wasn't happy about it. But yeah.
So while at one time it was, wasn't even universal that in Orthodox shuls, the shuls that had Orthodox affiliations, that there was a mechitza. Many of them had separate seating with no division. And I think the last Orthodox shul, I think, was grandfathered by the OU. It was a shul in Denver. Mm. And I think just recently actually installed the mechitza, but I think it was the last holdout of a shul that was an OU member shul, but and had separate seating, but didn't yet have a mechitza installed. So the question is, why was this such an issue? Especially at a time there were congregants and I think individual rabbis who were not trying to change Judaism or make ideological statements, but thought that here we are in America, and this is back at a time where religion in general was popular. They had family pews, and it was a big, there was a big pull to both with congregants in Orthodox shuls and from the influence of the non-Orthodox denominations to have either mixed seating or even separate seating without a mechitza. But really across the Orthodox spectrum, the leading figures really fought tooth and nail on this issue. And we're going to see some of the people who we've seen in previous classes, and people who disagreed on other issues were basically unified that there needed to be mechitza in shuls. That's Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, all the way from the Moshe Feinstein to the Satmar Rebbe. It was really across the board, at least among the leading figures in Orthodoxy, that they really fought tooth and nail.
Can I ask you a question? What's the opposite of a mechitza, sitting together?
So I think two things. One, sitting together, certainly not, but also...
Is that the opposite of what you're... Like, in other words, is that what was being pulled, that to sit together, or just not having a physical separation?
So I think in some places that it was... Mixed seating was being pulled. That was the big draw of the conservative movement at the time. And I think there were even Orthodox shuls that had mixed seating, but I know there were certainly Orthodox shuls that had separate seating but didn't have a mechitza. But nevertheless, as we'll see, from the entire spectrum of Orthodoxy, this was made into really a defining issue for Orthodoxy. And now I think we just take it for granted that an Orthodox shul has a mechitza. If someone were to show up from Mars and walk into a shul, I mean, not from Mars, they walk into a neighborhood, they don't know what the affiliation of the shul is, they walk in. So how do they tell whether it's Orthodox or not Orthodox? They see a mechitza. It's really...
Or they see a balcony.
They see a balcony. Right, they see some type of...
They see a balcony like a server shul, too.
Well, Beth David's is tiny.
No, Abdul has one.
Yeah, but that was for the choir.
No.
And in fact, it was actually even speaking about Orthodox shuls that didn't have a mechitza. There was a landmark case in Mount Clemens, Michigan, and there was actually a book compiled, The Sanctity of the Synagogue. And what happened? A gentleman by the name of Baruch Litvin, he sued his congregation for depriving him of his rights by changing the seating to mixed pews. So he argued that this congregation in their bylaws established that they are committed to Orthodox Jewish practice. So he had to argue in court that Orthodox Jewish practice requires the partition between men and women in a synagogue. And there were letters of support. Ultimately, he actually won the case. But it really was a defining issue. So why was this made into such a big deal? What's the source for a mechitza? So the first source that we have making reference to the idea of a separation of men and women in at least certain religious events is found, source one, the Mishnah in the fifth chapter of Sukkah. So it says, "B'motzei Yom Tov Harishon Shel Chag, after the first 2 days of Sukkot, when Chol HaMoed was beginning, and they were set preparing for the Simchat Beis HaShoeva, where the water drawing festival, where every night there were celebrations and jugglers, and Gemara says that if a person hadn't witnessed that, they really haven't seen any true joy. So while this was being set up, Yardu LeEzras Nashim, they would go down to the women's courtyard. Umisaknin Sham Tikun Gadol. And it says they made a great adjustment. So just to get an idea of what we're talking about, so here is this, the Ezra Nashim, it actually wasn't only used for women, it was used for other purposes. So the Mishnah says that they made a big adjustment, and we'll see what that adjustment is. The Gemara, in commenting on this Mishnah in source 2, it says, "My tikkun gadol." What was this great repair or great adjustment that they made? Amar Rabbi Lazar, "Kaosa shishaninu chelka haisa b'rishona v'akifa guzutra." That at the outset, women were upstairs. So first they made a balcony, and the women sat upstairs, and the men congregated downstairs. So there's Chacham Rishona v'Akifa Gezustra. They made a balcony. V'eskinu shiu nashim yosheves milamala v'nashim milamata. The women were around the balcony here, and the men were down in the Ezrat Nashim, in that courtyard. So Tana Rabbanan, what happened? Barishona hayu nashim mibifnim vanashim mibachutz. Initially, the women were inside this courtyard, and the men were outside. Bahayu ba'im lidei kalus rosh. But then, what happened? The women, they didn't have good visibility of the men. They wanted to see the separation, so they went, and they were on the same level, so it led to kalus rosh. It led to
distraction,
sort of inappropriate socializing. So then they switched it around. Then Then the women were on the outside and the men were on the inside. But then when the men were going into the inside, so they passed the women, they started chatting, and this was all in the vicinity of the Beit HaMikdash. It wasn't considered appropriate. So that didn't work either. And even still, they engaged in kalas rosh, in lightheadedness. So then what happened? Hiskinu shiyu nashim yosheves milamala v'nashim milamata. So then they made an adjustment where the women sat, or the women congregated above on a balcony, v'nashim milamata, and the men were down below. So the Gemara asks, hechi avid hachi, how were the rabbis allowed to make this adjustment? It says in Divrei Yomim, Akol Bechsav, everything, when giving the instructions for building the Beis HaMikdash, he says, everything, all I give you is in writing, Miyat Hashem, from, right, Alai Hiskil Kol Malachos Havtavnis, that all this I give you in writing, as the Lord made me wise by his hand. Right, and it continues upon me even all the works of this pattern. So all of the structural plans of the temple were divinely inspired. They were all, the instructions were precise. People weren't given the liberty to make adjustments how they saw fit. So the question is, how could the sages make this adjustment? How could they add this balcony that wasn't part of the original plan? So The Gemara continues in source 3. V'safta aretz mishpachos mishpachos levad, mishpachos beis David levad. So when it speaks about the a eulogy for the Yetzer Hara in the times of Mashiach, or a eulogy for Mashiach ben Yosef, who'll come before Mashiach ben David. There'll be some big funeral and eulogy, and it says there, this is from Zechariah, that each family will sit separately. Right, it says, David levad, Ulun Shehem levad, that the men will sit, the base David, the family from the house of David separately, and the women separately. So it says, Halo Dvarim Kal V'Chomer, isn't this a Kal V'Chomer? Wouldn't you certainly know one thing? So it's a Kal V'Chomer, you can say something in one case, so then certainly you can say it in a more obvious case. So it says, Umalasi Lavo She'oskin Behesped, if in the future when they're involved in eulogies, Ve'ein Yetzer Hara Sholet Bahem, and it's not a time where generally people are inclined towards levity, right? Amra Torah, Nashin Levad, V'Nashin Levad. The Torah says the men by themselves and the women by themselves. Akshav She'oskin V'Simcha V'Yetzer Hara Sholet Bahem, Alachas Kama V'Kama. So during the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, during Chol HaMoed Sukkos, where everyone's involved in Simchas, so it seems that there certainly should be a reason to separate.
It would seem that, I'm sorry, did you finish your thing?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
It seemed that Sukkot would be the only holiday that women would go to the Beit HaMikdash. And so it seems that, you know, they don't mention that it was Pesach or Shavuot either. So it seems that they were drawn to this maybe because of the spectacle and all that.
Right.
But I guess the problem being is it almost sounds like women were never intended to go to the Beit HaMikdash at all. And I mean, I don't know if there's precedent in it, but you would imagine, you know, laws of Nida and all that, it would be a bit of an issue.
If there was something called an Ezra Sinashim.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's invented. It sounds like it's invented. It sounds like it's an invented thing.
No, this is an adjustment.
The adjustment, the Ezra's Nashim was there. The adjustment was making the balcony above it.
Right.
Yeah, but okay.
They simply had the men do this spectacle, using the Ezra's Nashim as the place for it.
Oh, it sounded like the Ezra's Nashim was set up.
No, see, Ezra's Nashim is this.
It's always
is
there.
This courtyard, and there were other things that went on there, like certain rituals of the Nazir.
The women were always there, okay.
Or men, women. It wasn't only used for women, but the adjustment that we're speaking about was a balcony.
Two levels.
But I guess what's surprising, it took them 1,000 years to figure this out.
So it's so apparently.
Or even, whatever the time, it's a long, long time between the time of Moshe and the time of the Talmud.
Well, this was in the Second Temple. But apparently, this became, I guess, in the rabbi's eyes, only an issue of the what they considered inappropriate socialization at a certain point.
That it said specifically around this spectacle and this simcha.
So maybe in earlier years it wasn't a problem, but then it seems like a couple of years went by. So first they started putting the men inside, the women outside, the women inside, the men outside, and then that didn't seem to work because they were still on the same level, they were still socializing, so they erected this balcony. And the Gemara asks, how could they just build this balcony that wasn't part of the original construction plans? And the Gemara answers that we see that when this eulogy is taking place, that they... that it was necessary to have a separation between men and women, even on a solemn occasion. So it says all the more so when it's a event of celebration. So at least what we see so far, what does it seem like the function of the mechitza is?
To prevent socializing, flirting, whatever.
Right. Whatever.
Kalut Rosh.
Right. The Kalut Rosh. So what the Gemara says is that this was the issue, and they erected the structure to prevent this Kalut Rosh.
Isn't that what you go to shul for, though? I mean.
Well, we'll see. So in source 4, the second side. So the Rambam in his commentary to the Mishnah describes this Tikkun Gadol. He explains what it was, that they created a space for men and women, And it says, "Umakom hanashim lamala al makom hanashim." Right, makom hanashim kavol imena kadei shelo yistaklu hanashim benashim. So they created a space for the men, a space for the women. The place of the women was among the men's space, he says. Oh, so the men above, would not...
Not among.
Above. Right, the women's section was above the men's section. And the Rambam in his commentary to the Mishnah says, "Shelo yistaklu anashim banashim." So he says, so that the men would not look at the woman. And yistaklu more refers to gazing. A kind of gazing rather than lirut, rather than seeing. But the Rambam in his commentary to the Mishnah says that that was the function of this balcony that was erected.
So the women could see the men.
So I think it's
sure, most taken. The women can see the rabbi. Right.
So I think it's taken almost for granted that the women seeing the men for these purposes wouldn't be a problem. But there still is the issue of socializing. I mean, that goes in both directions. Mm-hmm. However, in the Mishnah Torah, which is generally considered more authoritative by the Rambam, so he says that they would. The women above and the men below. Here he changes the wording. He says not shelo yistaklu. He says shelo yisarvu, that they won't mix together. They won't interact with each other. So what might be a practical difference between these two reasons?
Well, infidelity and, you know, the start of an infidelity kind of thing.
Right. So that's what, we don't want to get that off the ground. But if the issue that if what a mechitza's function was is to try to prevent looking, so how could it be constructed? As opposed to if it's just trying to prevent socializing, might there be a difference in how, in the requirements for the construction of a mechitza?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then it would appear that the second in the Mishnah Torah, it says you could have basically a clear way where women can see, but they can't interact, whereas the first one, it's just no interaction at all.
Right. It sounds like according to the first one, according to the Perus or Mishnayot, that the setup would have to be one in which the men couldn't gaze at the women.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which it was. Remember they have. But they have a glass where the women can see through the glass, like it's tinted. But the men, they look through the glass. Up from
yeah,
the
Lubavitch have that too. It's like a smoke glass type of thing. Yeah.
So we'll see all the different mechitza one-way glass.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Actually, a lot of these mechitza designs are mentioned in the sources.
But when you say raised up, it doesn't have to be a balcony. Like we're raised up here, you know. I mean, even though we're around, I mean, if everybody was looking the same way, and the women were behind, I mean, even if you were up a little bit, like we are up a little bit, it would still above. Like it would be.
When you're sitting, when you're standing, it makes no virtually difference.
Yeah.
Right. So we'd have to analyze what the function of a mechitza is.
But and I'm saying it doesn't have to be a balcony. Does it have to be like we don't have a balcony? It's not considered like a balcony. It's just that you're raised. Is this you have to have a balcony, or is this?
We're not there yet. Okay. We'll see. Oh, some okay. Basically, the short answer is some say yes, some say no. But in the Beit HaMikdash and probably in classical shul architecture,
European.
Probably most shul European shul architecture,
Moroccan shuls
as well. That there tended to be a balcony. That tended to be mm-hmm. how shuls were designed. So,
I'm not sure the Kibbutz Center has a balcony.
Do the women only sit upstairs?
Yeah.
So we have these two seemingly conflicting languages in two sources written by the Rambam. In one, he says that it should be constructed in a way, or that the function is so that there's not gazing. And in the next source, the Mishnah Torah, he says the function is so they don't interact.
The only other thing you can say is that, you know, question is that, you know, it falls under And the Rambam, in the second one, it falls into the laws of shofar, sukkah, and lulav, right? There may be, is there an extra stringency between interacting with women during that time as opposed to, in general, what he says? Well, it's also about sukkah, I guess. It's, he seems to contradict himself, I guess.
Between saying it's not for the purpose of
Sukkot. They're both Sukkot, right?
Right, and it's the context that he is.
There's a contradiction. He's emphasizing two different things.
No, but he says they're both during the time of Sukkot, right? So yeah, why would he say one would be...
Interacting and looking don't have to be contradictions. They'd just be two aspects of what he's saying are trying to be prevented. They're both, you know, equally worthy of being prevented.
Right. He could mean both, but we'll see how the more recent authorities...
But my point is, why
notice this contradiction?
Why do you have to go and say the second one if you accept the first? In other words, if you can't even look, then you can't interact.
So for sure, you can't. Right.
So just say you can't look, that means you can't interact.
Right. I think the first one, the not looking, certainly covers the not interacting. Though the not interacting may not involve not looking.
Unless there's a different meaning context for istachlu, unless that means something else.
So I think istachlu in this case is like gazing. And Yisarvu seems to be more social interaction.
Mixing,
literally, mixing. Yeah.
It's okay, yeah. My wife's.
He's not interacting.
No look.
No one will, okay.
So in Source 6, the Rav Moshe Shick, the Maram Shick, he was a student of the Chatam Sofer in Hungary, and the Chasam Sofer was famous for saying Chadash Aser Min HaTorah, a play on words, but that the traditional community in Hungary was very staunch in keeping the old customs of not being influenced by the emerging reform movement. They even made certain enactments that drushas couldn't be in the vernacular. They were very...
Summers from Hungary, right?
Right. Yeah. So they're really of this... this group, so you see, it wasn't really addressed until here. We have the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Rambam more or less restates just what the law is when he codifies it. But you see, it's not really addressed on any kind of practical level or addressed as any question until the late 1800s. Mm-hmm. So it seems like throughout all this time, it was just taken for granted that the shul had some sort of separation between men and women.
But he went.
Stedos. They didn't have
that
all. Did they have balconies? All
these
little stedos.
Who?
Stedels.
Stiebels. So what a lot of them, I think, had, you go like basically separate rooms.
Yeah.
You look
in. Gouda has a separate room. Yeah.
And they had separate rooms.
Yeah, right. A little thing with a little hole in the.
Yeah. The Lubavitch on Edinburgh used to have that.
Yeah.
But this is the first time where it becomes like it's machmir, like it's a decree, it's a deen, like you have to do it, as opposed to, you know, I think they did that during the time of the Talmud out of convenience, so to avoid it, but not sort of decreeing it.
So the question is, if it was considered necessary, so maybe that would be considered a necessary, meaning if in the Beit HaMikdash it was considered inappropriate to socialize to whatever extent this was, so shuls are called mikdashei meyat, and there are many things that we do in shuls that are similar to what was done in the Beit HaMikdash. So I think it was assumed that if in the Beit HaMikdash it would be inappropriate, that in shuls which are modeled after a Beit HaMikdash, it would also, there would likewise be a need for some sort of separation of men and women. So I think that's really what
it's interesting that the whole calculus is based on separating the genders. Like, that's the only kind of socializing that's inappropriate in shul.
Well, there is also in just if you just look in Shulchan Aruch here, you're not supposed to talk during Chazaras Hashatz, even Psukei Dezimra.
Sports, the stock market.
It's not to say that that's okay either. Mm-hmm. I guess you can do what you can, but otherwise everyone's going to be their own box.
Yeah, you can't have purity of mind when if you're admiring a woman. I mean, I can't.
All right, so I think that's what's assumed.
That's why you're supposed to have a garden.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that was that it was, that until the late 1800s, it wasn't even addressed as a question. And it was really addressed in response, in Hungary, in response to the emerging reform movement. So the Maram Shik, or Moshe Shik, in source 6, he affirms the requirement of having a mechitz in shul. He says, "Anu mechuyavim lasos hefsek bein ezras hanashim leezras nashim." We, it is an obligation to make a separation between the men's section and the women's section, kemosha hayav beis hamikdash, just like there was in the beis hamikdash, ezras nashim lachud veezras hanashim lachud. There were separate sections for men and women. And we know from the verse that, and from the, it was really the verse that was quoted with the funeral for the Yitzhar and Mashiach ben Yosef, that there were separate sections. We know that this is something that's considered inappropriate. So Yalvina Mikra that sorry lasos tikun shelo yira nashim lanashim nation maybe lede kalis rosh shara veiros, because we want to prevent this kalis rosh and other types of inappropriate actions. So now we get to the 20th century, and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has several tshuvot about the topic, and I copied from the earliest one, and it's addressed to the questioner is asking about an Orthodox synagogue, that apparently it was becoming somewhat widespread for Orthodox synagogues to remove mechitzot. So here he it's a longer tshuva than what I copied, but he one affirms the requirement for mechitzot, also explains what, at least in his opinion, what the purpose of a mechitza is. So he says in source 7, Hine etzem adin sha'af im hanashim heim betzad echad, even if the men are on one side, v'anashim betzad acher, and the women are on another side, asurin hein lios below mechitza, ulanias daiti dina doraisa. So even if they're separate seating, men on one side, women on the other, it's still forbidden to daven in a shul without a mechitza. And he says that, in his opinion, the requirement to have a mechitza has a Torah level obligation, which is pretty bold. I don't remember seeing a verse in the Torah, "Thou shalt have a mechitza." But he says that this requirement is a Torah, is a matter of biblical law. And how does he prove this? So he says, "V'raya misoko daf nun aleph," from Maseches Soko, which we saw a few minutes ago. Shekshe b'gamara al ha-gezustra shasu be'ezus nashim b'motzi yom tov. It also challenged the idea, how could they just make this balcony on the Beis HaMikdash? How could they make an addition? You know, the Rishon Shelcha, Kedesh Lahoshiv HaNashim Lamala VaNashim Lamata, to place the women above and the men below, Vaksiv HaKol Beksav, and because bring the verse that all of the details regarding the building of the Beis HaMikdash is all in the verses, is all in Tanakh, that we can't just add other parts, make renovations. She'asur lahosif shum davar bevinyan habayis uvazara. That we learn from this verse that it's forbidden to add anything to the structure of the Beis HaMikdash or to its courtyard. And what is the Gemara answer? As we saw, v'tiritz rav the kra ashkeku shetzarik lahavil nashim menashim k'depeirush rashi ayin sham. So it answers that really we find that we found the case with the funeral that there was a separation between the men and the women. So it we can see from there that obviously, one, this was not an improper addition, and the need for such separation was the need to prevent Kalis Rosh allowed the addition to be made. So obviously, it's sort of have to see how the logic goes. That if it was allowed to construct this balcony to prevent Kalis Rosh, it must be that in the Beis HaMikdash and by extension in shuls, there's a requirement to ensure that there's no Kalis Rosh. And why is that a biblical requirement? Because if it wasn't biblical, the rabbis wouldn't have the authority to make a change in the structure. So for the fact that they were able to, and the fact that we see a precedent for it because of this concern of Kalis Rosh, indicates that the imperative to prevent Kalis Rosh in either in the Beis HaMikdash or in shuls has the strength of a biblical obligation, because if it didn't, they wouldn't be justified in at least in the Beis HaMikdash for making this kind of adjustment. So now he's going to get into the reasons for a mechitza. When he's barish at srichim midaraisa lasos gezustra shayu anashim lamal of anashim lamata sherak az einam kimmi'u ravin. So you'll notice he says so that they don't mix, they don't interact. So he uses the language of the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah. Not the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnah is. Mm-hmm. So he says, "Gam bevate kinesio shemizkatzbin shava nashim v'nashim lispalel tov yoser lasos gezustra shanashim yulamala." So he said, best thing to do is to have a balcony so that the women are on top. If it's difficult to make a balcony, then you have to. Mechitza, just back to definitions, mechitza literally means a wall or some sort of divider. For different halachic purposes, there are different types of mechitza. For example, a sukkah or an eruv. Even though for an eruv it may not look like a wall like we know of a wall, but there are other mechanisms of making walls. So he says that if they're not able to construct a balcony, they should at least have some real divider so that they don't fall to Kalis Rosh. And he says, Darei Chazinan, and we see Shemachitza Eina Mitzad Iser Histaklus. So he, Rav Moshe Feinstein, takes the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah as authoritative, which the Mishnah Torah is his work on halacha, and he seems to accept that entirely, that the mechitza is, he said, Eina mitzad iser histaklus, not because of prohibition of looking. Lachin mechitza gavoa ad akar akaspayim shemistaber shein lavo lidei kalis rosh yesh lahatir. So if it's not for the purpose of preventing any type of looking, there could be other issues with looking in general and during the time of davening, but if that's not the function of the mechitza per se, so he says it's sufficient for a mechitza to reach the shoulders, to be shoulder length. And he says, v'hu gavoa, gimol amos, three amos, shehein yuches tfachim, which is 18 tfachim, which is about 5 feet, and I converted it.
Which is like ours. Essentially, right. Because the women, if a man was to stand up, by the time their shoulder wouldn't, you couldn't see their legs, you could just see, you have to, it's at shoulder height where you begin to see the woman. Is that what it's sort of meaning?
Right.
Have you been in our sanctuary?
I haven't davened there yet. When I came for Mincha, we davened in here, but I took a peek.
Yeah. So is like ours. So in ours, does ours cover that?
That's right. It seems to follow that position, because Ramosha says that it doesn't need to. The function of a mechitza doesn't need to block any type of looking. It has to be tall enough where socializing would be difficult.
That's why my wife doesn't sit on the first floor. She never sits on it because of that.
So he said, and actually in other places. Oh, sorry.
Howie would give me candy.
So when there's a will, there's a way. But he actually talks about other designs. He says a one-way glass in which men can't see the women and women can see the men is okay. He says that a mechitza that's...
Who says this?
Ramosha Feinstein. I just summarize it in other places, that a mechitza that's 50 inches, right, 1.27 meters, I did the calculation on Google, I still have to get used to metric, and with the top is made out of glass, so that's okay.
I wish they did. I wish they did do that.
No, but whenever we looked at it, the glass would have gone too high. It would have suffocated the woman because there was the balcony hanging over it.
Oh, really?
Remember they talked about that?
Yeah, the circulation.
Gone within an
hour. So is this just for deafening? Because I know some Orthodox shuls have a high mechitza, and they have drapes. And then when they daven, the drapes are closed and the mechitza is there. But when the rabbi does his sermon, they open up the drapes so they can see. Is that...
Yeah, so this seems to be specific to the time of davening. Now, there's some, depending on circles and community norms, there are some parts of the community that really at all types of events have separate seating and whatnot. But it seems to be clear that at least during the time of prayer, which is modeled after what we did in the Beis HaMikdash, and shuls are modeled after our Mikdash Ma'at, or mini Bate Mikdash. So that seems to be an absolute requirement, not only to sit separately, but also to have some sort of division during the time of davening. Though we see, according to Rav Moshe, it doesn't have to block any type of view. He says in other places that if it's too low, then if I have something like this high, so then it's not any type of impediment to socializing. But I guess the idea is, at least if it's shoulder height, okay, you have to look over, you can socialize, but it already transforms it from a space where there's not sort of natural.
The only problem is people always, when there's a will, there's a way. Like even here, people, husbands will go over right to the section, 3 feet up, whatever it is, and start talking to their wife. So it's not like it prevents anything.
Right. I guess ultimately
during davening too.
Right. I mean, they're also pretty strict halacha. It's what the Shulchan Aruch says about talking during davening and chazara, even among men. Yeah. So. Yeah, we can't. At a certain point, people decide how they act. But I think it makes, you can tell me what you think. But I think where he's going with this is, it has to be high enough where social interaction is going to be at least inhibited.
Yeah, you almost get a sense, if these are the only sources you have, that at that time there must have been some beginnings of emancipation of women. That became, in other words, women never went to shul before. So, I know it's before the suffragettes, so to speak, but it's still, late 1880s, women sort of became, involved.
Rabbi Moshe Feinstein?
Yeah, even the Rav Schick, right? So in other words, it only became apparent when women started to do things that traditionally were sort of blocked by them. Because when we lost our Beit HaMikdash, there was really no reason for, women to go to the shul, right? Because that was to witness all those great things of Beit HaMikdash is a super thing. So if there's no Beit HaMikdash anymore, why would a woman have to go to shul?
So then we look at older shuls in Europe, that there were some, there was a women's section designated in many shuls. So there was, again, the extent to which women went to shul, you know, probably depended on a lot of factors.
Right, but if you look at this, if the times when these responses to Shavuot started coming out, and you look at what was significant about that time, you have to somehow maybe consider a correlation between the time and when this issue became apparent.
Oh, 100%, 100%. This was really when the reform movement really came out of the Enlightenment and more integration and more secularism, and so that was really where the Maram Shik was coming from, and Rav Moshe Feinstein was writing, I think this was one of his earlier tshuvas, but around 1950, so certainly he was writing, he lived in New York, it was in America, it was absolutely influenced by, one, the surrounding society, but also the surrounding Jewish community. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a conservative synagogue down the street, and they're pretty traditional. They have pretty much the same prayer book, but they get to sit together. So why in our Orthodox shul can't we do that? This was really why it was a question.
Yeah.
And there were some Orthodox rabbis who took pulpits in shuls without mechitzot. There was also the traditional movement, mm-hmm. thing was pretty prominent in the Midwest, which was not conservative. They're like Orthodox rabbis, but the shuls were basically Orthodox other than the fact that there was either no mechitzah or mixed seating. And actually Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, I think basically lost his job in Skokie by insisting that anyone who got smicha there could not take a pulpit in a shul without a mechitzah.
It's a mere yeshiva. It's a mere yeshiva, isn't it?
That's the history of Toronto conservative, because the conservative movement in Toronto is much later than in the States.
More traditional.
Yeah, you're right.
And the rabbis were Orthodox rabbis.
Yeah, but there was Rabbi Pappenheim who was smicha.
He was
smicha with Rabbi.
They all were.
Yeah.
At one time.
Rabbi Shield.
A few others.
So I guess you see here, this was a real.
They needed a job.
Right.
Because here, conservative Judaism didn't really start until about the 1950s, when the shuls they were downtown, so they moved north. There were Orthodox shuls downtown, and when they came north, they became conservative.
Yeah.
But so like
except for Sher Shemaim.
Like Ben Sedek was called Sedek on University Avenue was an Orthodox shul.
And Bet David was the old Romanian.
Pardon?
Paul
originally Ohab
Sedek? Gold
Sedek. Yeah, Bet David was the something from Romania.
They were on Shaw Street.
Yeah.
They were Orthodox rabbis in the conservative
center. But those shuls started off as Orthodox
shuls. Yeah.
And then when they moved north, they became conservative shuls.
But that same rabbi followed them?
Yeah, Pappenheim, he by bar mitzvahed me. I mean, he became...
He was with Shield. He was with Rabbi Shield.
Yeah.
They came together from Europe.
So you see, this is responding to an issue that affected the Orthodox community. I think that if this was only something that was within the conservative movement, so it may not have been such a need for Orthodox authorities to address it as directly and as strongly as they did. I think there was a need to address it because there was a feeling, and it resonates with me that we'll try to be as traditional as possible. Our congregants are. Diverse backgrounds, so maybe you have to choose your battles, and maybe mechitza is not something that's worth choosing. If otherwise, I can get people to come to shul, and so that was the thinking. And I don't blame rabbis for thinking it. I wonder if I went back in time, I've thought about it. I think I could
you
totally
a job. You need a job.
That also. But you see, like major authorities, and across the spectrum, really felt a need to address it and assert that the mechitza was not something that was optional.
I have a video. I've seen it of my uncle's wedding in 1959, because it was the year before my bar mitzvah, at Viewmount. And Rabbi Ox, his father, and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was the Masada Kedisha. You can't get more Jewy than that, no matter what. And at the meal, I was there, and it's on the video, all mixed eating.
Afraid of weddings is a different...
Everybody was mixed eating. And now today,
and
those people and their children with twins screaming under the room, I will not come to that wedding. I don't care how kosher
That's
it is.
That's amazing.
And they won't walk into the place if it's mixed eating.
Wow.
Was it mixed dancing too?
No, it was not mixed dancing. Rabbi Nussbaum, my uncle's now, when he got married, Uncle Chaim to him, who was my teacher at one time, he spoke. And the Teicher Reuv, who was my Zionist rabbi, he was the head table was separate seating. The whole rest of the place was mixed seating. Wow. So everything changed.
Yeah. Right, so in different settings, a wedding could be different considerations too, but
not anymore.
It seems at that time.
Today, bar mitzvahs and on Shabbos.
It's considered a Suda's mitzvah, right?
Let me tell you, my cousin made one here at View Mountain at Associated when it was a bigger place. Some of his friends went home. Said, no, mixed seating, Shabbos, forget about it. I don't think they talked to their wives much or something.
Right, so. In settings outside of shul, so there are other sets of factors and considerations, but these sources are specifically discussing in shul and during davening. Source eight, so Rav Moshe Feinstein's position seems pretty clear that the function of a mechitza is not to block view, but to inhibit interaction.
You know, to your point, a Suda mitzvah, Pesach is a Suda mitzvah. We're all sitting at the table together. What's the difference?
Right.
There's no difference. So
right, I don't know if that's in and of itself. A wedding could have other considerations, but that could be for another topic.
It's just not consistent, though. Truth is a Pesach Seder, the Shulchan Aruch portion, is it not a Suda mitzvah?
Yeah, can't get much more.
It's so always mixing at a Seder.
How do you know? They sit together. My next door neighbor was telling me they sit together.
Yeah.
We were in a Purim time where my son-in-law goes to yeshiva. We went to someone's house and we were in different rooms. The men went men and women for the Suda.
Wow.
Really? Yeah.
I mean, I know by Lubavitch it's that way, but by
if
you have the facility like to do that.
Yeah, but then what do you do? Megaphone? You can't use a megaphone to
over Pesach, right?
It's a little bit.
I don't
get it. Right. You make kiddush, you can eat, drink.
Yeah. Women sit at the end.
I've seen that as well. Somebody is far away.
But it's not. It's in the same room.
Where the good food is, that's where it is.
So the position of Moshe Feinstein is that a mechitza does not need to block view. In source 8, Lezer Waldenberg, he was known as Tzitz Eliezer, he was the posek for Shari Tzedek Hospital, actually has a lot of innovative rulings, and he takes a different position. He says, Midina anu mechoyovim lasos hefsek bein ezrus hanashim leezrus nashim, kamosh haya bebeis hamikdash. He says that there has to be a separation like there was in the Beis HaMikdash. And let's read the next part outside. He says, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention the law of putting up a mechitza in a shul because they didn't have these problems. All shuls had a thick wall between the shul and the women's section, and the women would hear from small windows in the wall, and so the question of mechitza was never asked. So he says, Shavishe Yamar Maspik Kvar Lokiach Al Al Chomer Achiyuv Shel Asiyas Mechitza Mabdelas Bein Beis Haknesses Bein Ezras Nashim BeOfen Shan Nashim Lo Yuchu Lo Volidei Yistaklus. So he says that the requirement of a mechitza is that it has to be built in a way that the men will not see the women.
So if I'm reading,
well, he doesn't agree with Rav Moshe. He's saying like it's an issue of seeing.
Right.
Yeah. See, if you go along the path here, you'll see, I get the conclusion that the purpose of the mechitza is to create an Ezras Nashim, nothing more. So the laws refer to Ezras Nashim. It doesn't refer to the mechitza. The mechitza enables an Ezras Nashim to be in existence, nothing more.
So the mechitza mentioned in the Gemara is a balcony, meaning the
but they don't call it mechitza.
Well, because mechitza literally is a
wall.
I know.
But my point is what is the necessity here? Is not the mechitza, it's the Ezras Nashim.
That there's a separate section.
Right.
So a balcony accomplishes that too.
Right.
Right.
So this issue of what therefore constitutes mechitza seems very vague. Because
right.
it's what is required in the Ezras Nashim.
So far we have no clarity Right. And no agreement between major, you know, poskim as to what the function of the mechitza is. Is it to inhibit the social interaction? Is it to prevent looking and therefore being distracted or somehow lightheaded?
That's my point. It's to create an Ezras Nashim. And once you have the Ezras Nashim, the laws of Ezras Nashim are pretty clear. You have contradiction. Well, you have arguments, I guess. You have different sides, but it's the Ezras Nashim is what is the essential item.
That there needs to be a separate section.
So I'm a little
but
bit.
But Rav Moshe goes beyond that. He says even if they are separately seated, there still has to be a physical separation.
But because that's not an Ezras Nashim.
Right.
That's not an Ezras. Just sitting. If somebody's sitting on the 5-10 feet away, but they're within. I can't touch them. That's not an Ezras Nashim.
Right. I think that's precisely what he's saying. There has to be. And he's saying it has to be significant enough where it's can be considered a separate section.
Yeah.
Because if we look back in the Gemara says Kalas Rosh. So Kalas Rosh, I think, is more descriptive about what was going on, meaning we don't want this result to happen.
Yeah.
And therefore, in the Gemara, they made a balcony, but it doesn't seem to indicate what the parameters are.
I looked it up on here. It said, of course, lightheadedness, but it also said irreverence. So in other words, it's leading your mind to think something beyond what you're there for.
Right, precisely. And actually, Rav Moshe said in the beginning of the Shua that he felt that a balcony was preferred, but it seems like with his position, preferred from the perspective that with a balcony, it's harder to socialize.
Rebbetzin Stern, our former rabbi, emeritus, if you will, his wife wanted, and the balcony, she actually wanted like pieces of either a curtain to be erected or something, a barrier, like
tinted
1.5 feet tinted glass she had wanted, but the board disagreed. But she said like it's even the balcony key was not really an Ezras Nashim in her eyes.
Right. So I think according to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein in some of his tshuva says that if you're able to make it higher, less visibility, seems to say that it's better, but yet his understanding of the basic law is that it's supposed to prevent socializing, which I think in another tshuva he mentions of a balcony, so maybe you don't even have a requirement of having something to block view, because then already you're
in a separate space.
Right.
But if you look, many of the very, very firm women who come to our shul on Shabbat, they won't even sit in the front row of the balcony. They go right to the back. So they can't either their husbands can't even see them, or they can't even see the men. So I mean, that's, I guess to them that's being machmir about it, but it's,
it could be. Yeah. I know sometimes there was
a shul.
So women are firmer about these things.
The balconies in the back.
Yeah.
And they had a guy about to fill it, and he refused to daven because he could see the women. He said, "Wait a minute. The only way you can see them if you go like this."
Yeah.
I don't want to daven.
Really?
He refused.
That's terrible.
They're completely separate floor. There's just an opening.
Bubba is from Poland, but
the top of people's heads.
In both cases, the structure was not designed built to be a shul.
Right. Well, Bubba's from Poland, but I think this is supposed to Hungary.
By cutting a hole in the
center. Right. So I think they come from that type of
the most
position of the Hungarians. Are they
very secular or very
Right. And perhaps part of the reason why there was such a backlash to secularism, communities.
There was German, Austro-Hungarian, right? So they were considered a little bit elitist, right?
Right, but the Hungarian, meaning the German Orthodoxy, tended to integrate more. The Hungarian Orthodoxy was really the separatist community.
Mm-hmm.
No speeches in the vernacular. There was, like, I think, an edict in like 1868 about that.
Really?
That they're very, no changes at all. And the Hungarian authorities, you see from the Chasam Sofer, and the Satmar Rebbe wrote on this, and it's probably the design in many Hasidic places follows this, that school of thought. So addressing the Hungarian physician, in source 9, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, known as the Sri De Eish, he says, the Hungarian position, Machmirin Ma'od, Vidorshin Shemechitza, Tia Gavoa, Lamala, Mirosh, Hanashin, and Mechitza has to be higher than the head of the women. The Od Marchikim Alechas, Vidorshin Shebayin, Enu Vesach Nesses, Mechitza Kazu, Asulis Balosham. And there are some who say that if there's not a Mechitza, as you mentioned, like like this, where there's totally blocking of vision, you can't daven there. And there were some apparently who said that in if the shul is going to be built like that, better for women to stay home and not come. He says they're certainly this proponents of this position are well intentioned. He said they to lishmor alat sniut kafish aita nehuga bedoras hakodmim, that they want to protect the modesty of previous generations. But he says aval bismanenu nishtane hamatzav nishtanu hativim, that the situation and the nature of people and of society is different. Vanashim imtisharana bevayis for lo tuena lebeis haknesis tishdachach mehem Torah Hayadus Lagamre. They'll forget, they won't be involved in Judaism at all. I guess similar to our discussion a couple weeks ago about Torah study. So he says, because this is a Vigal Chumra Yisera, She'ein La Yisod Bishasu Poskim. He says he completely follows. His thinking is really in line with Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, that the reason for a mechitza is not to block view. And it seems like he's reading the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, that it's not for mixing. And he says that those who are strict and insist on a mechitza that's so high that
because
blocks visibility.
Modesty? Because the stringency he's talking about is modesty?
For the women, Kilu.
He's saying that he's
He's saying there's no basis in Talmud and halachic authorities for this stringency regarding
the
modesty.
The mechitza.
No, the mechitza.
The mechitza overall.
I think
so
that
how could he be saying that when Rav Moshe says
no?
Exactly
a mechitza. I was saying a mechitza that blocks view in the.
No, he's saying the
gavoa mirosh hanashim, that it has to be higher than. Basically higher than the head so that you can't see. He said that is a stringency.
That's a stringency.
And he says that the communities that insist on this, that they're well-intentioned, they admire their commitment to maintaining the norms of previous generations. But he says that if we're going to insist on this for modern construction of shuls, if we're going to insist on that and say that if it's not built in that way, then women shouldn't come to shul at all. He's saying that that will have a negative effect on women's involvement in Judaism. So therefore, he seems to be encouraging what he feels is the basic halacha is like Rav Moshe Feinstein, that the mechitza is to prevent socializing, but doesn't have to be so high as to block any vision. And therefore, people shouldn't make that a condition of davening in a shul, or shouldn't say if we can't build a shul with that type of mechitza, so then women don't come to shul. He says that will have a negative effect, and therefore the position that a mechitza is to block socialization. So that is the basic halacha, and that may be followed.
That's what the Rambam says then.
Right in the second source.
Yeah, in the second source.
So. In source 10, it says an excerpt of Soloveitchik's positions on this. And he says, the separation of the sexes in the synagogue is a basic tenet of our faith. It dates back to the very dawn of our religious halakhic community and constitutes a biblical injunction which can never be abandoned by any legislative act on the part of a rabbinic or lay body, regardless of its numeric strength or social prominence. Clearly, he was referring to the emerging conservative movement and towards the general societal values at the time. He said what was decreed by God can never be undone by human hand. And Soloveitchik has many writings and recordings of his position, and he describes prayer in general, and I think this applies to the necessity of having a separation between men and women during a time of prayer, but really it gives us perspective about what prayer is supposed to be in general. He said that prayer is not supposed to be a social experience. It's really you and God, and there's a seriousness and a reverence that's supposed to take place.
Well, there also is the social component of a tzibur.
Of a tzibur, the tzibur collectively praying, that the prayer that tzibur being unified in that goal of showing reverence for God and that goal of communicating with God. So that's a powerful thing, but not to socialize among themselves, and certainly not in this kalus rosh, in this lightheadedness. And he writes in one place that in some ways the idea of a family praying together, of husband having his wife, a wife having her husband there, that there's a certain comfort that's there that doesn't quite, that mm-hmm. a person may not appreciate the experience of really relying on God and depending on God and the type of experience that prayer is. And I think when we certainly the technical requirements are important, but really I think what the great authorities this past generation fought for and really fought relentlessly for was to maintain the character of a shul and maintain a proper perspective on what davening is, that davening is a intimate communication, not with us and other people, but with us and Hashem. And we should, from this, hopefully try to appreciate the experience of what davening is, and hopefully see the building of the third Beis HaMikdash with the Ezra's Nashim and the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, and be able to celebrate together.
Amen.